This is Bam Electric Ghost, and we're live on our Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook channels with Salme Dahlstrom, right?
Hi.
Hi. It was the second time, or I can't remember, maybe the third time. And we're excited
I think it's
to have
the
you.
Second.
Second, yeah.
Thank you.
Think I wanted you to show up on something, and we didn't have you. You couldn't make it. But for my festival.
I could not.
In February.
Yes. But, well, next time.
Yeah, so excited because you've got a bunch of things going on. And just to note, we did indicate there would be another guest, but they're running a little late and you might want to go into that. But we're going to just give a nod to our sponsors first. One of our big sponsors is Newsly.me. You can see it running below. They are an iOS app that actually hosts podcasts, and they host this podcast. And what they do is they translate video podcasts to audio. And so then people can go and listen to it, you know, on their headphones. So if you use coupon code GHOST2021, you can get 1 month free premium subscription. And this podcast, Fam Electric Ghost, is on Newsly. So this episode will be translated to that. Use the coupon code GHOST2021, get 1 month free premium subscription. And then the other sponsor we have is an online Euro lottery called Double Jack Online. And what's interesting about them is they actually, if you take a scan code on your phone and grab that scan code, you can actually do NFTs with them if you're into that. That's NFT art. You can convert art into digital art and then sell it if you had your band posters and stuff like that. You could also do crowdfunding with them so they can support you if you're trying to record or tour. They can build a crowdfunding campaign that's international because they're European based. And so you can also become an influencer with them. And they do Keno and Powerball and Euro Lottery. And then people sign up and you get residual or you get passive income. So you can check that out. You see the scan code up there for Double Jack Online. So now we'll switch to our ghost mode and get back to our interview. And so let me see. Yeah, I've got your link, which actually doesn't have the name of your band. It has Yeah, your link tree. I'm trying to bring it up. There it is. So your link tree, can you tell the story for that maybe real quick?
Well, TACAT is short for the Acid Cowgirl Audio Trade, which was the first album that I made.
Oh.
And when, okay. You know, okay, when so I had funny. Like with management and all of that, they didn't want to say it. So it was like, tack it, tack it, tack it. And I became, where's the tack it girl? So that's really what it is.
That's cool. I forgot to ask you that last time. I did. Yeah. I think I blew by that. I didn't think about it. But then next time I was like.
But if you click on that, you know, anybody who clicks on it can get all my, you know, websites. You can pick and choose, you know,
yeah,
whatever your flavor is. If you go to my website, there's actually my home phone number on there, and I will pick up the phone, I promise.
You will?
That's a shameless plug, if any.
I hope my audience doesn't bug you, because...
We'll see. We'll see if it rings in the background here.
Well, maybe it's good, because it's unexpected, but...
Exactly.
So since the last time we talked, I know you're working on a bunch of things and you've got, you know, a couple of projects. Which one do you want to go with first?
Well, why don't we talk about me first?
Yeah.
So because I have two albums that I'm working on that I would love to talk to you about. One is I'm making another solo album. And then I have another album with my friend Kelly called Kennedy and Saint. And if Kelly can make it, she's running late. There was a fight at the whorehouse and, you know, she's tied up. And if you believe that, anyway, it's a joke, people. She's running late. So I'm going to talk about my solo album until she hopefully gets here.
That's cool.
If that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting in this whole kind of almost out of COVID phase where you're starting to see bands tour and albums starting to come out of that phase.
Yes.
I always ask a lot of bands, like, Did the COVID situation help you in your writing? Did it help you focus more so because you didn't have to worry about touring? That's like one side of it. So what do you think about that?
COVID wasn't great for me, the pandemic. In the beginning, I was like everybody else, right? I was like all energized and like, okay, I'm going to stay home and now I can, you know, I'm a full-time musician as is. So it wasn't that different for me, but I stayed creative in the beginning and then it kind of got to me, you know, and I would see these bands on social media, right? Where they're like, oh, we're so creative. We're making a video a day and we're blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't very productive for a while. And then I got injured. I injured my glutes and it's terrible. Don't ever do that. And I'm still in rehab to get back from that. It makes it, it takes, hard. Yeah, it makes it hard to sit.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk like, about that. Yeah.
And our lifestyle today is like you sit a lot. So I guess that's hard.
Yeah, no, it's terrible, but I'm sitting right now as y'all can see.
Yeah. You seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, I will be fine. I still have some rehab left to do, I shall live. But anyway, so I didn't do much for a while during the pandemic. And then now as of late, I have started to have these ideas and thoughts come together and decided that I want to make a solo album. Since I had a lot of time, I dwelled into things that I may not otherwise do. I started reading a lot of poetry a lot of American poetry, like Wallace Stevens, stuff like that. That's really.
Any particular era, like his era, or were you jumping around?
You know, somebody gave me a book of his poems, collected poems. And if I like one, I read it. If I don't, I turn the page. Mm-hmm. But I find it very inspiring. And there's also a poet that I found on Instagram. She goes by SRW. Amazing poems that could be song lyrics. And so, you know, and then a bunch of other poems. And then I watch a bunch of old movies. You know, I really dwelled into the Hollywood glamour era of the Dietrichs and the Monroes.
Oh yeah, I love that era. I mean, I love watching like Ingrid Bergman. I get crazy over her.
The problem. Yes.
But
Bergman's crazy.
Yeah, she's just like it's too much.
Yeah.
But it's good. But I think about the poetry. That's interesting. Like I started as a poet, and I'm very I have a bunch of poet collections, and then I was writing like electronic music and I never thought to merge them. And then somebody said, well, nobody wants to just hear your music without lyrics. And then I had all this poetry and I said, well, how am I going to merge that? Cause it's different, because I had been inspired by like Blake and Wordsworth. I like romantic poets. Like, so I'm really into William Blake and Wordsworth and Tennyson and Lord Byron. And I like the idea that they had, because they would like hide sex behind things like Little Death. You know, Little Death is like, if you know what that means, but they would hide things in layers. And I said, well, that's cool for songwriting, because then I can layer things and nobody knows what I'm really talking about. So I can hide behind it.
Yeah. No, but those are great poets, right? To be inspired by.
Yeah. And I think I love Blake because his poetry is so, it actually translates well to the modern era and works good within like a song. If you look at a Blake poem, like Tiger, Tiger, Field Through Thy Cemetery, there's something about the short, direct nature of it that can work with music. Like you can end up like taking that idea and maybe not being as verbose or as literally impressive as he is, but take that kind of concept in terms of the meter and everything and put songs together in that way. But it's just interesting. I think all musicians are poets in a way, and it's just a way that you have to make it work with the music. So it has, it's a different kind of cadence to it compared to like when you're doing, like if you were out doing a poetry like reading versus doing a song, did you find how that kind of balance between when you're looking at poetry and stuff and then turn it into songs?
Yeah, I read poetry mainly for inspiration, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they say good writers borrow, great writers steal. And so that's kind of my mindset when I read something or when I watch a movie, I'm like, what can I steal here? You know, and make my own, of course.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to get sued here, but you know, you kind of see something and you take it and you make it your own and twist it and turn it. So, but also I like poetry when I find certain poets, certain poems have a rhythm, you know, mm-hmm. and I'll like, and I'll be like, ooh, let me try that rhythm, you know, and you start kind of doing the same
thing with your own
lyrics or something like that, right?
It's like picking up a beat. Like if I listen to like Motown and I'm listening to like Percy Shuffle and I'm like, oh, I got to take some of that. Not that
exactly.
I want to I'm going to listen to Curtis Mayfield and I'm like, ooh, I like that groove, right? Or listen to Funkadelic. I think all musicians, like, like Prince's big thing was that he took like Curtis Mayfield and Santana and like Funkadelic and Hendrix and they kind of jumbled it all up. And then suddenly he got Minneapolis sound, but you can pick it apart and you can see the Curtis Mayfield and you can see the Santana, you can see the Funkadelic, you can see the Kraftwerk, you can find it. And I think that's what all good musicians do is you find a way to blend your influences and to come up with something new.
I absolutely agree. I mean, all music comes from somewhere, right? It comes from what you've heard and what you're influenced by, what you love. And it's your way of taking it and making it your own and, you know, mixing it up. So I completely agree. And that's what I do in general. I mean, like you say, musicians, that's what we do. But this time, since I had time, and I didn't have a clear view of exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't want to make the same sound that I had on the last album or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking for something new. Part of that is trial and error, right? So I'm lying in bed late at night and I'm like, I wonder what it would sound like if I took T-Rex and I mixed it with Daft Punk, right? It sounds fabulous in my head. And then the next morning you go to the studio and you're like, okay, you know.
Maybe that doesn't work.
Yeah, we'll see, you know.
I'm always trying to take a little like my favorite. I don't know if you heard of Big Star, Alex Chilton. I always try to take some of like Alex Chilton's like Big Star Third, which was his most uncommercial record, next to say like, okay, I should be like channeling that, but then like people later like, well, how are you gonna sell that?
Right. Well, that's. That's a secondary issue. First, you got to create, right?
Yeah. But so it's I always pick things that are kind of like Lou Reed, like White Light, White Heat, mixed with like Third, Big Star Third. It's like, well, that's not going to be a top 10.
maybe not, you know. But you know.
Kind of where my head's at. So that's where I'm going to go.
Well, speaking of Prince, he allegedly said to Gwen Stefani at one point, they were talking about songwriting, and he said, just write a hit. Don't sit down and say, I'm going to write a song. Sit down and say, I'm going to write a hit song. If you have that mindset, you're more likely to write a hit because you're going to push yourself.
It's kind of like a Beatle mindset. Like if you don't get like a Lennon McCartney, they're going to, you know, or like if you get like a Funk Brothers or like, you know, Smokey and Marvin Gaye, they would sit there and they're like, we're going to write a hit, you know? They were going to like put that together and we're going to run it through the whole Motown machine and see who it works with. Yeah. Because they would take a song until it became a hit. They would run it through all the bands until they found the one that did it right.
True. Yeah. You know? But I think you and I can use that as well. Even if you take two albums for influence that are not very commercial, you can still, once you have that hook, and you know, you've written that kind of a hit thing, you can use those influences maybe in a way that makes it commercial. See what I'm saying? It doesn't have to not be, unless you sit there and say, all right, these two albums were not commercial. I'm just going to continue in that vein. No, steal the best stuff off of it. And it could very well be, right?
Well, if you think about it, like, you know, a band like the Smashing Pumpkins or like, you know, a lot of grunge bands, they were influenced by, you know, like the Velvets or Big Star or, you know, and so they actually took those ideas and then made them work.
Yeah.
So the whole, the whole alternative kind of grunge era is like taking like lo-fi bands, like, you know, like a Husker Du or Replacements and actually making a Goo Goo Dolls. Like the Goo Goo Dolls took a lot of ideas that Paul Westerberg had, which were actually Alex Chilton ideas, and then actually made them work.
Yes.
You know, so it's possible, and I'm in that kind of mindset as well.
Yeah.
I like the original, like, you know, Paul Westerberg idea, but I do like what the Goo Goo Dolls did with it. So I was like, yeah, it's like if Paul had wanted to be more commercial, he could have done it. He just kind of was kind of stuck in a Big Star mindset, but. But I think, I think it's like you there's a good advice from Prince. You got to write a hit, and that's a man that wrote hits, but then he has thousands of songs that aren't.
Maybe he tried every time to do it. You know, it's you're not going to succeed every time, but I keep that in the back of my head. And so anyway, I've been running like scenarios in my head of sounds, and then I have all these like influences and inspirations and all that. And I'm finally at a point now where I know what I want to say and I know how I want to say it. But it's all up here. I haven't started recording it yet.
So is this album, is it like thematic in its style, or is it like a typical, like, well, a 1970s type of album might have multiple types of colors to it, but it might not be a concept album.
Right.
Like Tapestry has a feel, feels like it is like a full album, right?
Yes.
But it's not necessarily a concept album, but the songs work all together.
Yes.
But they kind of come from different angles, but it seems like it works as a overall picture. Is that how you, because a lot of people are into the Spotify playlist single mode, but you still think in terms of albums, right?
I do. And I know it's these days it's considered a little old fashioned, but I like a good 10, 12 song album.
Yeah.
When I and you're absolutely right. Like I draw from such a wide variety and different, you know, inspirations that it's not an album where 10 songs sound the same. It's more like Tapestry where for me to make a successful album, for me, the songs have to belong together on that album and work together, but they should definitely be different from one another, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like Sgt. Pepper's. Sgt. Pepper's, you know, the songs are very different, but they all work together and they kind of merge into it. And it seems like a concept album, but if you try to ask it, like, what is the concept? It doesn't really, it's not Pink Floyd. It's not Tommy. It's not Quadrophenia. So it feels like it. So it's kind of like a precursor of what you could do. And other bands started to say, okay, what if I actually made it more thematic and made it more tied together? Then you get something, you know, and Abbey Road maybe got closer to actually being a concept, but still wasn't really. But it still feels like it, you know, but I that's what I love like about the 70s. Like you can go through all the different bands.
Yeah.
You know, you can take an Alice Cooper album. You can take all these bands and it just feels like, you know, I was listening to Zappa in A Mother's Invention and I was like, wow, this stuff is like, I just totally got into a Zappa phase. And I was like, wow, I'm just like listening to Zappa like all week.
And they went
to, like everything. I'm like, wow. That's like it's mind blowing. But it just seems today, like, I don't know if people don't have the patience to like sit there and listen to a Mothers of Invention album, but like if you take the time, you know, that is a cool thing to do.
Absolutely. And I think for mainstream artists, there's not necessarily the money in making it. Like, it doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint to make a whole album anymore. Like, so they don't do it because of that. But as an artist, you know, I'm going to insist on making that anyway.
Well, it's kind of hard because, like, you make that one song and then it gets playlisted. Well, then what happens? Like, it's going to drop and you don't have nothing else to represent what you're doing. I always thought about at least an EP, at least you get a picture of who the artist is.
Right.
Like, in the Spotify playlist world, I get a picture of one band and I don't really get to know them.
Right. And then it's just a song, right? Yeah, it's just a song.
Yeah. You have no idea who they are. I think the whole thing about music is you get caught up in the mystique of the band or the artist, right?
Yeah.
You get pulled into the artwork in the album, you get pulled into the story, you get pulled into their whole stage presence. But if you don't, we get like 2 minutes from an artist, it's like, how am I going to get engaged into who they are? You know? And so I think in the indie world, we can, you know, and we do in this kind of underground world, in indie world, we're able to go longer because the audience is, you know, on the kind of college radio type audience. You know,
yes,
we have
absolutely
is willing to listen to more than one song.
Yes.
You know, and that's what I love about this type of thing, you know.
I think that audience wants to get to know the artist, right? They now that we're back to making vinyl again, they're gonna sit there with their headphones and read the lyrics, right?
Yeah.
Vinyl
is core to like this new music movement. Because in the vinyl world, you get to engage an artist or you do the cover, you do the photography, you do the liner notes. And then the audience gets to have something. I think when you can touch the music, it's kind of like when I was a kid, when I picked up like a Led Zeppelin album and it had this real twirly thing and I could, you know, you could see some of the Zeppelin albums had these cutouts.
Yeah.
And you can pull them out or spin them around. You know, even like the Velvet Underground Nico album with the banana, the Warhol banana, you can pull off. Like, that was cool. I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, go to the record store and you physically touch the record and you're looking at it. That was like my whole experience. I have a hard time not having a tactile experience with music. And I understand everybody's on their phone, but...
it's different.
Yeah,
but vinyl is making a comeback. So,
yeah, are you thinking of trying to do that? Because it seems to have a good engagement. Like, if you can do it even at a micro level,
I think I would definitely. I'm definitely considering putting out vinyl of the next album.
I think it works better when you can tour because it's like a merch table type of thing. What I found is if I could go to New York and I could bring us like 100 copies of a limited edition Peg album, I could sell them all. If I go play that night or two nights, I can sell everything I brought, and I actually make more money selling 100 vinyls than I do on Spotify for a while.
Nobody makes money on Spotify, so
I could actually make money with 100 albums if I market it right. You know, I actually can make cash on a small amount. Like if I sell 1,000, I could do very good.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it is kind of a cool thing, you know, not just selling t-shirts. I mean, I know a lot of bands sell t-shirts, but like, I think it just is good engagement with your fans, especially if you do live shows, if you have a way to, you know, connect and sign it. And then, you know, you get your audience kind of excited that they've got something to take home. Other than the feelings from the concert. So this album you do, when you get it done, do you think you'll be able to tour it?
I'd like to. So I'm definitely going to aim for that. I really love playing live, and I haven't done that in a while. So, you know, I'm not going to promise, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, it is hard. It seems like the bigger bands are able to do it. It's just like the smaller bands, it's hard to get good engagement if you can't get the number of people in the club. Like if I can't get that club to be packed, then I don't make the money worth like driving to New York in a van. Yeah. If I only get 25% filled in that club, I'm not going to make enough money to justify driving to New York.
Right. No, of course.
Yeah. You know, so that's been my problem. I used to play in New York and Boston, but it's like, I can't justify it if they can't guarantee a certain number.
Right.
I can't do it. So that's been doing it online.
And write a hit song, Keith. Write a hit song.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Do what Prince told you to do.
Yeah, I got a lot of songs. My problem is I write so many. Yeah. I kind of like run into that problem that Prince had, that he'd get bored. Like he'd write a kiss, but then he had like 100 other songs, and they're trying to tell him, hold him back. And he didn't want to hold him back. He's like, well, I know I got this one that's the hit, but I like these other ones.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of in that kind of head space, but I understand that you have to like focus on a smaller number of them. But
I am not that fast of a writer, you know? It comes in like, sometimes I write, you know, a lot of songs in a short period of time, but I'm not like Prince or like you, where I'm like, here's 100 songs.
Yeah.
Plus it takes, you know, producing it, and I do the producing and the editing and the mixing and all of that. And I play most of the instruments. And so there's a significant amount of time spent on each song. Right. So for me, if I can put 10 to 12 together, that's going to be it for me.
Well, I think that's still like today, there's like people, they focus on one or two, and you're still doing more than that. So, yes. It's just, I'm kind of hyper crazy. I'm basically like, I got like 120 songs already
this year.
But I just, you know, I write pretty much every day, and I go back and I have the means to do it. So I just do it. And I kind of do it in kind of jam band way. So it's kind of like, you know, like listening to Sun Ra or Parliament Funkadelic. I have a jam style way of recording kind of in a live fashion. And so it kind of, each piece is like a sound painting to me, and they kind of take it like that. And so instead of trying to be very intricate, and sometimes I'll take the time and build a song track by track and actually try to make it like a proper type of thing rather than a jam type of thing. But my natural way of writing is more jam based. So that's where it tends to go. But this seems like, so I know we wanted to talk about the other project, but like we can't do that today because she's not here.
No, I can talk about it for sure. I'd love to. And I'd love for you to, you know, play a little bit of the song that Love and Rebel we have and all of that. So, and if Kelly can't make it.
I actually have it queued up. And I was kind of wondering if I should wait, but I actually have it. So let me say, there it is, right? So I've got it.
There it is.
Lover and a Rebel. And it's a short lyric video that actually had more than just lyrics. So if you don't mind, I'm gonna play it. And then we'll talk about it. I'll just mute you for a second, and then we'll play it, all right?
Sounds good.
Wildfire, I got a full tank southbound if you wanna ride.
If you wanna ride.
Well, if you got a sweet tooth, honey, we could have a real good time. I know a cozy little hideaway across the state of line. I know what you've heard about me and why you've come around. If you're ready for this, come on.
Feeling so high. Feeling so high, never gonna come down. Gonna take what's mine. Roll the dice, you know I'm feeling oh so fine. Gonna be alive.
just wanna let loose, baby. Treat you like a playground. There's no curfew on my watch.
So that was Lover and a Rebel, and let me get back to the main interview. Here we go. We're back, and we get back to a better view.
All right.
You can hear me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a cool style. I like the beat, and I like the visuals, and I like the whole vibe and the sound. So maybe talk about how you came up with this project. Oh, I think she's here.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she just came in.
Hello. Hey,
there you are. I guess you're in your car. I guess you got out of that house. You got
coming. Coming to you got out of my car.
You got out of the brothel in time. We're so happy for you.
Yo, it was looking rough for a while there.
I told the joke, but I did tell them afterwards it was a joke.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, that's fine. Either way.
Girls got to do what a girl's got to do.
Listen. It's how it be. How are y'all doing?
Good. We just played Lover and a Rebel.
Yeah, we just played.
Woo! You did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yes. I love it so much.
And Keith wants to know how this all came about. So I have been yapping here for 30 minutes. You want to take this?
Sure. Oh my gosh. I mean, we've known each other forever. Years. I think, well, with one of my albums, I think in 2008 or 9, we worked together on that. And then, you know, we were just, you know, great friends since. And, you know, Soundmate came to me, gosh, a little bit ago, and was like, hey, you know, I have this vision. You know, I've been working on these beats, and I've got this vibe that I'm thinking about, and you're all I'm thinking about with this vibe. And I was like, oh, I'm like, send it over. Because she's amazing. She is. She is so fantastic. So when she had called me to work with her, I was like, where are we doing this? And what is happening? Yes.
Well, yes, Kelly asked me. She asked me, she's like, so what's it going to sound like? And I was like, all right, it's going to sound like two chicks who look like, what is it? Brigitte Bardot and act like Mick Jagger.
It's true.
Well, that's a cool vibe.
No, but what I love about Kelly, she's like, I get it.
Yeah, I'm like, you got it. Done. Yes. Done.
Yeah.
Heard. Noted.
Well,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's like when I was reading your write-up, it's like, you know, you have a shared love of 60 music and the Yay Yay Girls. And then you talk about the Brigitte Bardot.
Yes.
And it's like got a little bit of hip hop and electronica with like catchy pop melodies. And it's about independent female power and swagger. And that swagger, like, you know, Mick Jagger swagger.
Yes,
Mick Jagger swagger. Yes.
Yeah.
I think you summed it up there. But there's like Kelly has this. She's an amazing singer-songwriter. I've always loved Kelly's voice. And the stuff that Kelly does is very in a minor key, I'm gonna say. There's a lot of poetry and heartbreak and all of that. And I come from this like pink, splattery, pop rock, electronic thing over here, which they have nothing in common, really, you know. But
you
had
know, you
this.
You know, we weren't. You wouldn't be sitting at the same lunch table. You know what I mean?
Right, we would not be sitting at the same lunch table at school. Yeah.
We like Mean Girls.
Don't look at me. But I had this idea. Like, and Kelly has this like retro vibe about her. Not only the voice, but in how she dresses and like her attitude, like everything. Like
stage presence.
And I was like, I want to take the 60s Kelly and I want to mix it with some of the stuff that I'm doing, the hip hop beats, the electronic stuff, but something that's completely different from what I do and something completely different from what she does. Right. So there you have like the 60s stuff, the French pop movement, the Yeah Yeah movement of the 60s. Right. Some of the American stuff with the Nancy Sinatra, and you know.
Oh yeah, that's a great album.
Stuff like that. Yeah, and strong women, right? having yeah. fun, doing whatever they want to do, and dress it up in a little bit of, you know, today's beats and electronic stuff, and
kind of anyway. Really make it our own, you know.
Well, I've been if everybody watches my podcast, I've been very female focused on female singer songwriters because I feel like the guys have kind of fallen down a little bit.
And haven't they? Yes.
I found what's more interesting in on the scene are female singer songwriters that I don't think are getting enough attention. So like most of my shows since I'm 2018, I've focused like 80 to 90% on emerging or independent female singer songwriters. Because, like, you know, I was, as a kid, I loved Liz Phair.
I love Liz Phair. Yeah.
Yeah. I got like everything that she ever did. I was totally in love with her.
Yep.
And, and I was into, like, you know, a lot of the female bands in the 90s and 80s, just because I thought they were more interesting. And I just was kind of tired of the kind of guy, kind of Jagger swagger. I wanted to see something else, like Juliana Hatfield. You know, I really like into what she does too.
Yeah.
So, I just think it's cool to see where you're going, and I like the idea of doing a duo. It's kind of like when you create a band, you take something that didn't exist. You know, usually it's the two personalities. You know, they create that kind of, you know, dynamic thing. If you think about Hall and Oates. You know, without you know, when they came together, you get this, like, you know, or you know, the Everly Brothers. You know, you get two people that come together, they create something totally different. And
that's what happened here. And Kelly, if you want to talk a little bit, I know I cut you off there with send me what the music
Where
I sent
we?
You. And well, the brothel was burning. No, I'm just.
There's smoke on the water.
Yes. You know, I mean, ultimately, I mean, I think where I was at was, you know, she'd called me up and I was, you know, more than flattered and honored to be able to jump on a project with her because she's just fantastic. And I mean, she sent me over the first, I think it must have been the first beat, right? Which was for Lover and a Rebel. And I remember having it and you know, she sent me some vibe, some inspo, which was like a lot of Brigitte Bardot and some of that genre and that, you know, badass, you know, really strong feminine energy. And I was like, I got it, let me go have a cocktail and I'm gonna write this song. And I mean, I am so in love with that tune. And I mean, I listen to it all the time still, and I'm so proud of it. I just thought that was when we knew, and I think Sami agrees, once we put that and we heard it in the studio put together and, you know, we're getting it mastered up in New York, and we were both sitting there like, wow, like we just really hit gold with this one. And we knew the potential then for the collaboration and the project. And it's going to be so great. It's going to be amazing. And it's going to be a bunch more of Lover and a Rebel. I mean, we've worked on a few tracks already and I love every one of them. You know, it's hard. Yes. It's not always something that I could say. You know, I've done a few albums and I love my music and I love my stories. But it's something when you genuinely are like, wow, you don't know which you could pick as your favorite. So I'm really happy with that. You know, bias, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but hey, your opinion counts.
My opinion counts.
I feel the same way about it. And like we were talking earlier, Keith, we're making an album and it's not 12 Lover and a Rebels. They all sound different, but they all belong together. Yeah, like a Carole King record or, you know, Dusty Springfield record, something like that. But the theme is, you know, that retro feel and that 60s empowered woman, you know,
sexy and powerful and feminine energy. And I'll tell you, for me, as she was saying earlier, you know, my vibe, my style of writing has typically been, you know, my God, heartbreak, you know, listen to it in the tub, you're a mess, that kind of thing. If you go through my ex two albums, it's a lot of that. This project has been so transformative for myself, and it's been so great to have her energy on board with it and with her beats and just overall, because I've had the best time playing, you know, this role and becoming this person through this album, because mm-hmm. it is a whole collection of that vibe. And it's just been, it's been hella fun. It's just been great.
More like an energetic, fun album that has, like, you know, empowerment, but not like a lot of things today have gotten into this kind of melancholy, kind of dark, you know, they got dark wave, synth wave, dark pop.
Yeah.
People are, that's not, you know, are, have, no. have kind of very depressing kind of sense. And they're like, well, you know, there's people who are like, oh, I don't like it being too happy because that's boring. So they want to get like real Lou Reed kind of.
This is engaging, I'll say. I'm happy. You know, I'll say the vibe is very high. The vibe is really electric and mm-hmm. it's engaging. It's engaging. You know, it's, yeah, you can put the windows down to this record.
Well, I think people need that because they've been locked up and they're probably tired of being yes. tired of being depressed and tired of yeah. listening to. I mean, not that I don't like Nine Inch Nails, but I don't want to like get that
right
crazy.
Now. Right.
You know, I don't want to get that. Right. I don't need to be that down.
We're coming to the table with an alternative.
You know, I also think that it's a lot easier to be misunderstood. Nobody understands me. I'm standing here in the corner by myself being melancholy, than daring to be happy, positive, you know, and still kick ass.
Yeah. I mean, it's like yeah. I always point out, like Motown, you know, the songs might have been about like loss, but they had this like infectious beat. And so even if you're talking about you lost your baby, you're still like, wow.
Yeah.
You're still dancing about it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, yeah. so it's still like enthusiastic. It's still kind of funky. It's kind of got exactly. that, you know. Yeah.
Enthusiastic is a perfect word. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I tend to, with my solo stuff, I do basically everything myself, you know. So, and it's been so great working with Kelly. Because we kind of just throw ideas back and forth, and there's never a wrong idea. I mean, and there's been some crazy stuff. I mean, we weed out the bad stuff, but, you know, I'll be calling Kelly, be like, listen to this. We're going to kidnap this guy. We're going to put him in the trunk of the car, drive him across state lines. And she's like, okay.
You know? I'm like,
that's the next song. Just hold on, kids. It's coming.
It's coming.
No, but there's not like, you know, you can just, whatever's in our heads, we just put it.
My alter
ego,
Josephine Electric, had a song about kidnapping a CEO.
Oh, okay. Well,
there you go.
This was just a guy who didn't do what we wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And isn't that fun?
She didn't do what she wanted
either. Isn't gasoline fun when it burns?
That's a cool line.
Okay. I know where it comes from.
I'm like, no. I'm going to write this down.
Yeah.
You're going to write that one?
We'll give you credit for that.
Yes. Thank you.
What I find is like, you know, I've been a solo artist for a while, but I was in bands. You know, when I was 17, I was in like garage punk bands that were inspired by The Clash and the Sex Pistols and stuff like that, and Joy Division. And I always loved being in bands because the thing is, like, I can write, I used to write like all the songs, but then other guys would like challenge me in the band and say, well, you know, we're not doing it, let's do something different. Yeah. And I do love when I actually get another writer that's strong enough to tell me that we should change it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the thing here that I thrive on, because I gotta be on my A game, because she's gonna know when I'm not, and then she's gonna come back at me with something where I'm like, oh, I gotta top that, you know. Yeah. And so we're kind of doing that, and it's just great with the way the ideas go back and forth between Kelly and I. And then, you know, we get into the studio and musically we're like, you know, arranging things and all of that. And yeah, it's exciting.
We'll say that does help to have the collaboration, because you do keep each other on on each other's toes. And it is just become a bit of a fun kind of game of let's top the last best thing that we did. Yeah, let's one up it. Yeah, you know, I could do the better lyrics. She's like, I can do a better beat. And we're going at it. Yeah.
That would lie a lot.
Yeah. One day, like I send Kelly this track. It's called Vegas. And she writes me back. She writes, "You don't hesitate, and I like that move. I've had a lot of boys, and I'm not in the mood." And I'm like, "Damn!" You know. And then that sends me back, right, into the studio to add on the next thing. And then she comes back with something, and I'm like, "All right," you know. And so it's a wonderful collaboration.
That's a killer track.
It's like that Lennon McCartney thing. You know, Richards and Jagger. Like what I find is like when I get with a group of guys or even like if I've been in bands with like a female kind of center band and I would be a keyboard player and stuff, it's just cool to have other writers. And then, you know, like to have a real drummer. Like I've been in bands with like really good drummers. And, you know, I spend a lot of time drum programming and I think I kicked ass on this. And then I get a real drummer come and takes my stuff and like, well, just throw my stuff out. Did you just play it?
Yeah.
You know.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just something about like a real physical drummer on a drum set if they know what they're doing.
Oh, of course.
Can help you my 808 or my 727 or whatever I programmed. But you know what?
It's nice to mix the two.
Exactly. Yeah. And everything has a place. You know, that stuff's still great where it can fit and use, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's just, you know, because I'm a piano player, I could write all the parts, right? So I'll write the guitar part and I'll write the bass part and write them. But like a bass player is going to take my bass line, unless I did it on my Moog. Sometimes like I can actually outdo my bass player on my Moog and then I'll say, well, we'll use the Moog instead.
Right.
But it's just like you take the person that has the expertise, you know, and it's like, if they're going to actually, you know, add something that you didn't think of, a different color, a different way of doing it, you know, put the beetle chords in instead of doing it a certain way. I think it's just cool to have that kind of collaboration. It drives your creativity, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So are you guys going to take this on the road once you finish?
Yes. Yes, we are.
So tell us where we should go, everybody. Where shall we go?
Yes.
Vegas.
I like Vegas.
Vegas is happening for sure. Vegas is happening.
Nashville. Yes. New York City.
New York, Texas, DFW, Nashville. Yes, those.
I don't know about Boston. Like I'm from New England, but you know Boston sometimes doesn't have the vibe, but you know sometimes it does. But yeah, I mean, I end up going to New York, and I live closer to Boston, but I'd rather go to New York. And everybody can get mad at me. So what are you talking about? Boston's awesome.
Right in Boston.
We love Boston, but you know, I'm a diehard New Yorker at this point.
Yeah, there's more places to play in New York.
Yeah, and I think the vibe of what Kelly and Saint is has a lot to do with that. I've lived in New York for decades and Kelly lived here for a very long time as well. She may not be here any longer, but it's got a lot of New York in it.
Yeah. If you got that New York vibe, it's kind of like Lou Reed had the vibe, you know, he was like, you know, channeling that all the time. So
you never lose that really, you know?
Yeah. If you got that, you stick with it. Yeah, because that'd be cool because, like, I do these online shows where I have podcast guests do shows. And so, like, I'm trying to do another one in August. If you guys are on the road then, you know, if you want to do something.
We would love to.
Yeah, because you find some studio to run it from or you do it from your basement or you do it, like, unplugged. And, you know, kind of like what I do when you see me on Instagram. I just, you know, play what's behind me. But I got like 3 camera shot and I just run it. But I just like the, you know, it just gives people a place to kind of just go live and feel free. I mean, the only thing is like I say compared to like, you know, living, the problem today under COVID was, you know, you don't have that audience feedback. So you kind of got to be high on your own music.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Because if you can't get high on your own music and perform, then you're like, well, then I'm not going to perform. Because you have to have that audience to get excited. Yeah. Then you're not going to kick it. So, like, if you're going to do, like, online, you have to be able to get excited without that feedback. Which I know some guys, right, they can't do it. They won't do it.
You know? Oh, we can get excited.
We're always excited.
We're always excited. We're girls.
Yeah.
That look like Brigitte Bardot and act like Mick Jagger. We're always excited.
We're always excited, darling.
I think that's the right vibe.
Get a lot of thank you. Yeah, we talk a lot too.
Yeah. We have no problem with any of that.
No. We have probably too much energy.
Do you have a target date for when the project's going to come out, like this end of this year or some time this year?
Ooh, no, we don't.
I think we'll have a better idea in August.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. We'll be able to kind of gauge it a little bit more.
Will you release singles as they're ready or wait till you get a full thing together?
I think we're going to, we talked about maybe releasing another single or two this, at least in the next, this year. So there will be more music, new music from us coming.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool.
How much of it at one time?
Yeah.
And live and stuff, we'll see.
Yeah. Because what happened to us was that we had finished up Love It or a Rebel and we set a date to release it. And I believe it was maybe March 19th or something to that effect, which is the day that America shut down for COVID.
It literally went live, and then we all went home.
Yeah, we all went home. And, you know, like Keith, you and I talked about earlier, I wasn't very creative during the pandemic. And I think Kelly can agree with that. Neither was she. It just wasn't doable. And so whatever plans we had, whatever, you know, promo schedule we had is out the window. And now we're going to pick it up.
You got to rebuild all that.
Yeah. We have a couple of songs that are almost ready to go. But as far as how we release them and when, you know, we'll have to get back to you.
Well, I always always offer with any bands and artists I talk to, like when you get close to having like a major release, we've had release show episodes where somebody, you know, if you have your band album, if you have your record ready, that we can do like a hype episode to kind of push it.
That'd be so great.
Where we can go into detail talking about it as much as you want to. But I kind of always like this kind of behind the music thing. So if you've got a brand new record, brand new project, I kind of like, oh, well, let's talk about like how this thing came to be and what it means and, you know, how it works together. Cause that's the way I'm into music history. And I like every genre, like anything. Yeah. That's
cool. Oh, we'd love to do that. Absolutely. Yeah, sign us up.
Especially, you know, because we had everything had been worked in and lined up. And I mean, it was a good, like many months worth of work, right? Getting a launch together and putting everything, you know, getting everything lined up, interviews and all of that. And then, you know, the world shut down and, you know, no one's talking about at the moment, you know, nobody, at least for the first 6-7 months was like, hey, let's keep rolling here. Everyone's what's happening in my life, right? And so...
Yeah, I just doubled down on podcasting, and then, you know, I always record, so that's just what I do. But the podcasting kind of been my kind of like savior for keeping me out here, just because I kept on finding, you know, people that needed to keep on talking about what they were doing.
Well, that's such a gift.
And I just found a way that it works, you know, that I think just because I'm a musician myself, I try to come at it from a perspective of treating an artist with respect, you know, and wanting to hear your story. You know, I don't want to hear what happened with your significant other or whoever, whatever happened. You know,
you want to know what happened to the guy in the trunk of the car.
Yeah. Well, maybe I don't need to know that, but
oh, we'll let you know. We shall tell you.
At least the first part of it will be on this album.
That's always been the next thing to the next album, have a part two.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
That may be recorded in jail. We don't know yet. We'll see.
That would be so fun.
But no, it wouldn't. I don't do well in jail.
You know, yeah.
Just letting you all know. I look great in handcuffs, but beyond that.
Yeah.
Maybe,
say that out loud?
We always have to push it a little too far.
Yes.
Well, I'm excited that I was able to get like both of you on today, and you know, we haven't had too many of these like multiple like type of shots. Most of the time, right. People are in the same place, and this platform does allow me to do it, but I haven't had a lot of bands didn't realize they said, "Oh, well, my drummer's in some other place." It's like, well, he could have come on, but they didn't think about it.
That's how we do it these days. Yeah. It's so wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to us, and thank you for waiting on me while I come to you from my car.
No, it's not a problem. I think it's awesome because I think you have a really cool vibe, and I like I said, you know, I've been into supporting like the singer songwriters, you know, I think the guys have been kind of falling down, and I think it's time for the women to kind of step up and just take it over, because like. I don't know when we're going to see another Rolling Stones, or probably not.
Right.
So I think we're going to see something different.
I think there's a lot of women out there that have found their voice and they've decided to let the world hear it, you know, and we feel it. We feel like we're not alone. There's like a whole movement of women, you know, doing this thing, you know, whatever we want to do. And setting it to music, and it's exciting. Well, it's
cool to hear your perspective compared to like what we've always heard, you know. And,
right.
And I think that's why rock has been kind of falling down, in my opinion, just because it wasn't listening to other points of view, and that's why like hip hop jumped in and took it over because it was coming from all these different voices, you know.
We're here to pick it up and pin it up against the wall.
And to take, you know, get on the festival stage and like just rip it up and take it over, you know?
Yep. I'd like to do that. Yes.
Yeah, well, I can see you guys being able to do that. You know, listening to what you did, even
Thank
the snippet.
You.
And I've heard.
We really appreciate your support.
Yeah.
Steve. We really do.
Well, I think it's important, like I said. And this has been on our Twitter, and we are on that's new, where Twitter now does allow us to actually be a full episode up to like an hour. And even on the replay, it'll be an hour, which is not something you would normally see on Twitter, but now they're doing that. So we're on the Twitter, we're on Twitch, we're on YouTube and Facebook. And within an hour, we'll be on Spotify podcast. And then it's going to cascade to like Apple and Radio Public and Stitcher and a bunch of other ones. So I will get you the links to those, and you guys can get the MP3 and MP4 and do whatever you want and cut it up. I'll send that to you.
Thank you.
You shall do that. Thank you.
Well, you guys have a good night. I'm very excited that they see the end product of what you're doing, because you guys are infectious in terms of your excitement and enthusiasm about it. And I just am looking forward to it.
Thank you. We'll come back when we have new music. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. This is Josephine Electric, the lead singer of Phantom Electric Ghost. And so Newsly, it picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them back to you in a natural human voice. So for the first time in history on the net, the web becomes listenable. So they have, you can browse articles and topics and choose what you want to have start playing, stop scrolling, start listening. They also have podcasts, as well as you can explore trending podcasts from 40 countries. Our podcast, The Phantom Electric Ghost Show, with Phantom, is over here too on Newsly. So download the Newsly app for free now at www.newsly.com. newsly.me. That's newsly.me. And use that link on the podcast and use promo code GHOST2021. That's GHOST2021 and receive 1 free month premium subscription. And when you're at it, listen to the Anchor podcast on Phantom Electric Ghost, where we interview independent artists from around the world. And you get to get a window behind the music of independent artists that you might not normally listen to. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening to Phantom Electric Ghost and Josephine Electric.